This is the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
16th to go, an American Pharoah and firing line, and it's American Pharoah pulling away late. American Pharoah rules the Derby!
Run Happy just keeps coming at him past the 16th pole. Run Happy, and boy, does this horse love to run. The aptly named Run Happy for Edgar Prado to take it.
Also sponsored by Abracadabra Farm, Adena Springs, Airdrie Stud, American Racehorse Magazine, BetAmerica.com, Brisnet.com, Cal Density, Castleton Lions, Claiborne Farm, Coolmore, Daily Racing Form, Darley, DerbyBox.com, FarmPaint.com, Flair Equine Nasal Strips, Gainsway, Jimmy John's, Kentucky Bank, Tollgate Hay and Straw, Kentucky Downs, the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, the Lexus Store of Lexington, Maryland Thoroughbred, Mill Ridge, Nicholson Insurance, Owner View, Pin Oak Stud, Ramsey Farm, Santa Anita, Spendthrift Farm, Washington Hay, and Woodbine Entertainment.
But there's no catching Wedding Toast. Wedding Toast, much the best here, all the way in the Beldame.
There will be a fourth jewel in the crown. He's an everlasting credit to the sport. American Pharoah has belted a grand slam in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Now, here's Anthony Stabile and Jude Feld.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am the Big A, Anthony Stabile, pinch hitting for the Baron of the Backstretch, Mike Penna, on vacation. He'll be away the next couple of weeks. You're stuck with me. You're certainly not stuck with the pontiff of the Pick Four, Pope Jude Feld, who's joining me in our Lexington studios. I'm up at Aqueduct in the biggest restaurant in New York City, the Equestris, and of course also down at Lexington, our producer to the stars here at HRN, the one and only Lee Delapina. On a morning after more senseless tragedies over in Paris, we hope that a couple of hours of horse racing talk can get your mind off things and focus on some positive stuff. I don't know about you, Jude, but I remember right after 9/11, after a few days here, especially being in New York, all I wanted to do when the weekend came was get back to the ponies, and we didn't run here in New York for a while, so I had to make my way up to a Shoreline Star Greyhound track in Bridgeport, Connecticut, to get my fix, and me and a bunch of buddies and my folks hopped in the Honda and headed up there, and it was a good way to get my mind off some things, and hopefully, thoughts and prayers with everyone over in France.
Yeah, it was a very tragic incident, and of course, last night I was very concerned about some friends of mine in France. Found out that they were okay, and it's the kind of thing where if you don't go about your day, the terrorists win. So. We have to just continue on, and of course, it's a sad thing for all the people that have to deal with their friends and relatives passing away unexpectedly. Nothing worse than that. So, yes, you're correct. Our thoughts and prayers are with everyone in France, and especially those involved in this horrific incident.
Yep, 58 countries tuned in to our Breeders' Cup coverage. I'm sure we had plenty over in France and specifically in Paris. And again, our thoughts and prayers go out to everyone overseas. Back here in the States, plenty of racing action this weekend. We got a pretty cool show lined up for you this morning. Speaking of international, Eric Barland of Tito's Handmade Vodka is going to join us. And he has a pretty interesting story from his Saturday at the Breeders' Cup. It really was a Mongolian Saturday, and we'll let Eric talk about that in a little while. Kendrick Carmouche, currently tied atop the standings for leading rider here at the Big A. Kendrick just came back from injury recently, and he has set this place on fire, winning races in bunches. Kendrick Carmouche will join us later on. And then in the 9 o'clock hour, Linda Rice, winner of over 1,000 races in her training career. She has two in down at Laurel for their festival of racing, their fall festival of racing today. Six stakes in all. She has the favorite, morning line favorite anyway, in two of them. Hot City Girl, Lava Dodd's little sister, and of course the multiple grade one winner, Palace. Linda will join us a little later on. And the voice of Pimlico and Laurel, Dave Rodman. Always good to talk horses with Dave. Dave will be on later in the 9 o'clock hour as well. We'll do like we do every week here on the Equine Forum, folks. We'll set you up with a little poll question. A lot of talk, Jude, this week. Now that the Triple Crown and the Breeders' Cup are in the rearview mirror, most of the time, this time of year, talks sort of turn to the Eclipse Awards and get a little social media buzz this week. At least I was on my Twitter feed that whether Victor Espinoza should be considered for the Eclipse or Outstanding Jockey. So that's the poll question this morning, HRR Nation. Should Victor Espinoza be given consideration for the Outstanding Jockey Eclipse Award for his remarkable ride aboard American Pharoah this season? And of course, you can hit us at HRRN on Twitter and let us know what you think. Should Victor Espinoza be given consideration for the Outstanding Jockey Eclipse Award for American Pharoah this season? Any thoughts on that, Jude?
Well, I think absolutely he deserves some consideration. I mean, imagine the pressure that he was under through the Triple Crown and then, you know, Breeders' Cup Classic Day. I mean, I don't know. You know, traditionally they give it to the jock who wins the most races or the most money or the most stakes. But, you know, I don't think it necessarily has to be like that. I think, you know, Victor certainly would be under consideration. Now, the other side of that coin is people say, well, he's riding a great horse and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, unless you've done it, unless you've been there, unless you have been around that kind of pressure, you know, you can't really say anybody could have ridden that horse. I mean, maybe if, you know, Johnny Velasquez rides the horse or Javier Castellano, maybe he doesn't pull all that off the, you know, the grand slam, as they like to call it. I don't know where did that come from, the grand slam.
I refuse to acknowledge it. Refuse. Yeah. You got me. And you know what's funny? I saw your tweet about it, and I really hadn't given it much thought. And after reading your tweet, I was like, you know what? He's right. I refuse to acknowledge this. Yeah. This doesn't exist.
Well, it exists now because somebody made it exist. I mean, but it's like, it doesn't make any sense to me, really. But whatever. The horse did a great thing. He won the Triple Crown, and then he made it even greater by winning the Breeders' Cup Classic, the first horse to ever do it, the first horse really that was eligible to do it. So it's right. it's like establishing a track record, but it's a little harder to do than that. So, you know, it's a great feat, and Victor was certainly a huge, huge part of that. Rode the horse flawlessly. You know, the situation in the Travers, I don't think Victor could have done anything differently there. They were chasing him, you know, trying to get him to get beat, and they did it. So, but it wasn't because anything Victor did, I don't think.
No, I completely agree with you, and it's just great that when a horse wins the Triple Crown, and we haven't seen it for 37 years until this year, obviously, I love the fact how the machine, if you will, has kept on going throughout the year. Him being on the racetrack, obviously, kept it going through Halloween and that big score in the Breeders' Cup Classic. And now, even afterwards, you see the talk about Victor maybe getting the Eclipse Award. American Pharoah himself, one of 12 contenders for Sportsman of the Year with Sports Illustrated for Sports Illustrated magazine. I think that's who maybe came up with the Grand Slam too. It may have been Tim Layden from Sports Illustrated. He may have coined the Grand Slam, so we have him to blame for that. But it's just great to see the sport still in the mainstream and continuing to cross over and hopefully grab us some more fans. Let's take our first break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Eric Barlin from Tito's Handmade Vodka. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Lane's End.
Adina Springs added Macho Uno's best son, Mucho Macho Man, to their stallion roster for the 2015 breeding season. And with 95% of his mares getting in foal, he certainly took to his new job well. Mucho Macho Man earned $5.6 million on the track, culminating in his thrilling victory in the 2013 Breeders' Cup Classic over Will Take Charge and Declaration of War.
On the outside, Declaration of War, Will Take Charge. Mucho Macho Man just keeps on finding on the lead. Will Take Charge, a late drop. Oh, it's close. Mucho Macho Man, the more they asked, the more he gave.
Few horses can be multiple graded placed at two, run in all three legs of the Triple Crown, and then go on to become a Breeders' Cup Classic winner as an older horse. And all this from a foal born June 15th. Visit AdinaStallions.com to learn more about Mucho Macho Man and all the Adina Stallions.
Don't miss Penn National's Holiday Racing Festival on Wednesday night, November 25th, when the legendary millionaire Ben's Cat tries to win his fourth consecutive running of the six-furlong, $200,000 Fabulous Strike Stakes. But it won't be easy, as his talented competition will be led by Favorite Tail, fresh off a sharp third-place finish in the $1 million Breeders' Cup Sprint. Post time for the Penn National Holiday Racing Festival is 6 p.m.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Murfreesboro, Tennessee, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Don't miss the Land of Enchantment Day at Zia Park in Hobbs, New Mexico, with over $1 million in purses. Watch and wager as three-year-old fillies meet in the $300,000 added Oaks at a mile and 1/16th, and the Zia Park Derby for three-year-olds worth over $200,000, plus the Grade 1 Zia Park Quarter Horse Championship at 440 yards. Join us Wednesday, November the 25th at New Mexico's Zia Park.
A multiple Eclipse champion with more than $6.1 million in earnings.
How about that? Gio Ponte will go back to the winner's circle today.
Gio Ponte's first crop of yearlings were in high demand, while a colt by Gio Ponte topped the first session of the OBS Fall Mix Sale, selling to Conquest Stables after working 3/8 and 33 flat. All of this coming on the heels of his impressive maiden winner, Pirolone, at Belmont Park. Champion Gio Ponte standing at Castleton Lions. Kale Density announces a revolutionary gastrointestinal guard and aid for all classes and all ages of horses. A natural registered animal feed product, it comes as a single dose disposable syringe or a handy top dress squeeze pouch. Field trials on Kale Density digestive aid have returned 100% favorable results as observed by their trainers and owners, and the cost is half of what horsemen are accustomed to paying. Kale Density digestive aid will be available in mid-November, or you can order online at caldensity.com.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Bobby's Kitten, much closer to the front than he was at this stage a year ago. Has to swing wide, though, off the turn. Six lengths off the lead. Mongolian Saturday has the lead. Here comes Lady Shipman on the outside. Ready for Rye, drops back third. Bobby's Kitten, fourth. Green Mask is fifth. Mongolian Saturday with the lead, chased by Lady Shipman. Green Mask and Bobby's Kitten. Mongolian Saturday trying to hang tough. Lady Shipman and Green Mask. Mongolian Saturday hangs on by a head and pulls the upset. Lady Shipman had to settle for second in 1:03 2/5 seconds.
Kurt Becker on the call of the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. Mongolian Saturday was able to hold off the fantastic filly Lady Shipman in a late run from Green Mask to win that Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile, joined by the Pontiff, Jude Feld, and you, HRRN Nation. Thanks for tuning in on this Saturday morning. Mongolian Saturday paid $30 in that Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. and nice enough to join us now for a little while is a gentleman that has a pretty fun and interesting story that revolves around that win by Mongolian Saturday. It's our friend Eric Barland from Tito's Handmade Vodka. Tito's, of course, is our title sponsor for Jock Talk, which you can catch every Tuesday night, 6 to 7 p.m. on Sirius 220, XM 206, and of course streaming live at horseracingradio.net. We had Alan Garcia on this week. Eric, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, you sound great.
All right. We were out having a few Tito's last night, so it was an early bell to answer. We were giving away Tito's bottles and turkeys to my top distributor here in Chicago, and then went out with a couple of the old school guys and going up to Whitewater today. So they are the Warhawks, I believe, and all their gear is purple, so all my Breeders' Cup gear will come in handy this afternoon while I'm tailgating.
You know, I have to say this, and Jude can testify to this for me anyway. I get keychains, I get polos, I get pullovers that say HRN. I never get any of this cool vodka stuff.
We can take care of that.
I get pens and hats.
I took care of Mike before, so I got to take care of you guys. That's cool.
They don't make those Tito's suits big enough for you, Big A, or me either. if they gave us each a suit,
I'm about a 48, I think. So I always joke with Tito that when I put that thing on, Tito's becomes like a four syllable brand instead of two. So.
I was a 48 when I was 12.
Yeah, I think I need a 56.
That was kind of the whole focus of that Mongolian Saturday. I got chills listening to that call down the stretch just because, first of all, it's just an incredible activation over there. What those guys accomplished. I know there was a lot of worry, whether Keeneland could pull it off, and their staff was just incredible. And, I don't know if the racing fan realizes how hard it is to just transfer over a track for 1 week, of events and racing. And Brian Pettigrew, Bob Ellison, Brandy Stockinger, Tom Lute, Peter Rotondo, Heather Higgins, Brian O'Leary, you meet these people over a period of time working with them, and you become close with them, and then they're working with the staff, and we're trying to pull all of our stuff off. And they really did it with flying colors. I think there was going to be a concern about parking and getting in and out, and it was just a phenomenal day. They set so many records. I was reading some stats, and, they had the most Grade 1 winners to ever enter the Breeders' Cup. They had record handle and betting days. You had 7 fields of 14 people or 14 horses, so you just had such an opportunity to wager and make money, and the atmosphere was phenomenal. So I really hope those guys get it back someday, because I thought it was a little bit different, being there, just we're racing, we have all the sales there, you have so much activity around equine events, and those people were just so excited to have it. So it was just a tremendous experience to be a part of it. So, the flip side of that is, we're sitting there, and Tom Lute had won the race like 3 years ago. So he had won the sprint, I think, when he was with Vinery. And he's like, come on down to the winner's circle. And, then we're going to go in and we're going to do a toast with whoever wins the race. So we go down there, and we were with Dora Delgado and Frank. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. And we're taking pictures. And I get the big Tito suit on. And Mongolian Saturday wins the race. And I didn't really have a lot of details on horse. I didn't play him. And Tom looks at me and he goes, this is going to get crazy. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what's going on here. So the whole crowd starts to erupt. And there's like 20 dignitaries from Mongolia. I don't know who they are, but they're all dressed up like, they've got the full gear on, the full attire. And they come down into the winner's circle and they're taking pictures with the horse. And the horse is kind of a freak. He was a freak in the paddock and he just broke clean, held on by, I think, a neck. And then so we had to go back to this room to do the toast, and they were supposed to do a champagne toast. So I'm sitting there in the suit, and they see me, and the one guy that spoke a little bit of English, he like comes up to me and he's like, is he good as Russian? I can't do a Mongolian accent. That's basically what he told me. And I said, no, it's better than Russian. And like 5 of them started to like get happy and growl at me. And then they started to talk to the translator, and I think they thought I was Tito. So they didn't want to embarrass me. So basically, what they did was they pulled in like 3 bottles of Tito's and they started pouring 3-ounce shots of that instead of the champagne. And it was just so funny to see those guys so excited. at the score. They had bred that horse specifically for the opportunity, you know, to run in the Breeders' Cup. And I guess they were just a huge hit around town all week. And, you know, I was asking the one guy, I was like, you know, did you bet your horse? And the translator was saying, you know, we can't bet like that. We've not like that in Mongolia. I was like, but did you bet him today? And I started counting like imaginary cash through my hand. And he had not really spoken any English the whole time. He looked at me and he goes, 14-1. So if he knew the odds on his horse, he definitely bet it.
Well, that horse had blown out so well. I saw him blow out for the race, and I had him on my Pope Jude sheet. I just really thought he had a big chance at the race, and he came through with flying colors. But I didn't know about the Mongolians until earlier in the day. Dick Gabriel, one of the local sportscasters here in town, was interviewing them in their native costumes and everything, and the Mongolian flag was flying behind, and I took a picture of it and posted it up on Twitter. Just fantastic. Just to see that at the racetrack and at Keeneland especially, where, you know, people dress to go to the races, but they don't dress in Mongolian outfits. And the
people were cheering in the stands.
Yeah, it was
fantastic. They were going crazy for these guys. And I thought it kind of really represented the international flavor, you know, of the week. And kind of, it was wild because we kind of went on a roll betting the horses after that. It kind of, I don't know, it was just like a lucky charm or something. We started to hit some races. But I thought the best line was my two Chicago customers in the suite in the back, and they're yelling at the guys while they're taking pictures, "We love your beef." I found that
hilarious. That's funny.
But, I mean, we had such a great activation there. You know, one of the things, I don't know if you guys heard, and you might want to tell the listeners, but we, our director of philanthropy worked with my team, with Jackie Rue and Brian David, and we created these specialty silks. I knew Maker's Mark was doing their specialty bottles. So we had Tito's silks commissioned. They were personally designed, matted, framed. Then Tito signed one cuff, and Victor Espinosa was nice enough to sign the other. So around Kentucky Charities and some national equine charities this year, because of those efforts, we're going to try to raise about $100,000, a lot of that towards PDF. So we'll have a minimum bid on these charity events for those silks at $2,000. And we already sold like 3 or 4 of them for $10,000. So, you know, trying to give back to the racing community a little bit, you know, while we're partnering up with all these things.
Well, it's a great thing that you're doing. And I got to say, your product is second to none. I've been drinking Tito's vodka long before you were a sponsor of our show. And there is something about it that is just so velvety. The viscosity of it is different than any other vodka I've ever had, especially if you keep it in the freezer, which I highly recommend. But it's off the hook.
It
is so good.
It's made, you know, 100% from corn. It has a little bit of a sweetness on the front end. And I think that shows up when you put it in the freezer as well.
Well, I am going to. One of my best friends is getting married next Friday, and I have a bachelor party tonight. So I'm going to try. I have admittedly never had a Tito's. I don't even know if I've seen it here on the East Coast.
Really?
Unfortunately.
Well, you guys are spreading the word today. Then I'll have to get you guys a package out before next week.
I'm going to try and figure out if this. I'm going to a pretty nice steakhouse tonight. I'm hoping they have it, because I got to grab myself one of these. You guys are just. It's 8:30 and I'm dying for a drink. I'm all pumped up right now. And I'm out of my mind over here. I'm all alone at the top of Aqueduct. I'm in the Equestris restaurant. I'm saying to myself, there's got to be some booze around here somewhere. And I'm all jonesed out right now. So I'm going to try and find a Tito's tonight. Eric, the email you sent us, just to outline the day a little bit, one of the interesting things I read, they actually named this horse with the aspirations of winning a race on Breeders' Cup Day. Is that correct?
That's kind of what those guys were telling me, that the horse had been named it. You know, they were also detailing the, you know, just crazy stories how, you know, they've been racing since the days of Genghis Khan, you know, for thousands of years. But the way they raced over there, they have races that last for hours that are like 20, 30 miles long. And they're big pageantry events. But I believe that horse was named in the hope that it would get to run in the Breeders' Cup. It was bred specifically for it. That's what the guy was telling me. Now, I don't know if it was. You know, there's a little bit of broken English with the translator, but that's what I understood to be true.
Yeah, I think the Mongolian Derby's actually like 100 miles or something. It's crazy.
It's just crazy. crazy.
Yeah.
So I've never seen people more excited to win a horse race, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, it certainly showed in that winner's circle. I had no idea about the Mongolian connection until the race was over. And I looked up and I saw all the red and the blue in the winner's circle. I was like, "This is how cool is this?" And the first thought that popped into my head was the same thing. This is what the Breeders' Cup's all about, the international flavor. It was reminiscent for me of the 2000 Kentucky Derby when Fusichi Pegasus won and Fusao Sekiguchi, his owner, had a few Japanese girls in the winner's circle. You remember this, Jude?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, in the kimonos.
Hard to forget.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah. So
that was my first derby, actually, my first live derby, in person derby.
All right, well, I just want to thank you guys for the partnership and for having me on and your continued support of the brand. I'll make sure that I get some stuff out to you guys and appreciate everything you guys are doing for Tito's, and I hope we can get on again soon.
Well, we appreciate your support, and we'll have you on soon. And thanks for a few minutes this morning. Before you go, Eric, all I have to say to you is, Tulgatskaya.
That's right. That's what they were yelling.
That means cheers.
All right, guys.
In Mongolia. Eric Marlin from Tito's Handmade Vodka. Have a great day, Eric. Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much, guys.
Take it easy.
Time now for our Lexus Legends of the Turf. It's brought to you by the Lexus Store of Lexington.
Sam Riddle, owner of Man of War, once made the now famous remark, "Thoroughbreds don't cry." By that, he meant that they had the heart and courage to keep on trying, no matter how badly the odds were stacked against them. There are those of which legends are formed, like Black Gold and Dark Secret, both of whom broke a leg during the running of the race but refused to stop running until they crossed the finish line still fighting. Undoubtedly, one of the most memorable tests of heart in the chronicled annals of thoroughbred racing was the two-year-old ongoing duel between two superior colts, Aladar and Affirm. Both were chestnuts, both schooled by top trainers, and both were members of the same outstanding Raise a Native family. In toto, they both typified all that was poignantly majestic about the thoroughbred breed itself. Affirm was a good little horse, standing at 15.3 hands, that's about 5 feet 1 inch, and Aladar was a good big horse, standing at 16.2 hands, about 5 feet 4 inches. You know, there's an old racing adage to the effect that a good big horse will beat a good small horse. Those who echoed that well-known refrain forgot one simple thing. Affirm was a fanatic. Once he got to the lead, he absolutely refused to let another horse get by him. The fact was that Aladar was also a fanatic in that he refused to stop trying to pass, no matter how consistently Affirm defeated him. In their first six meetings, Affirm had whipped Aladar four times. But when they went postward beneath the hallowed twin spires of Churchill Downs in the lengthening late afternoon shadows of an early May afternoon in the run for the Roses, Aladar was the crowd betting favorite. One of the fascinating aspects of the Affirmed Aladar battles was the difference in their respective running styles. Affirm was a quick breaker, and once in front, flatly refused to relinquish his advantage. Aladar was a relatively slow breaker who came from off the pace to make one big run. That 1978 Kentucky Derby showcased those patterns and tendencies most graphically indeed. Although Aladar chased Affirmed valiantly, the Little Harborview colt won the race over the Game Calumet colt, which thereby upped the composite log to Affirmed 5 wins, Aladar 2. It turned out to be a case of equine deja vu in the run for the Black-Eyed Susans at Pimlico 2 weeks later. This time, the big horse made an even more determined run for the lead and was defeated by a bare neck. Laz Barrera, Affirm's trainer, said that even if they had gone around again, Aladar would never have caught him. There were not many others, including Aladar himself, who bought into Barrera's absolute vote of confidence. The Calumet colt went postward as the favorite in the ultimate test, the mile-and-a-half run for the Carnations, the Belmont Stakes. And there was a solid faction of knowing horsemen who were of the opinion Aladar had been whipped by Affirm so many times, 6 out of 8, that in effect, Affirm had broken Aladar's heart, as it were, and that the race would be a walkover for Affirm. The 111th Belmont will be long remembered by Ogden Phipps, then president of the New York Racing Association, and everybody else who saw it as well as, quote, "the greatest horse race I've ever seen," unquote. I was a witness, but I must frankly say the match race between Al Sab and Whirlaway at Narragansett in 1942 was better. So be it. Nevertheless, Affirm got away from the barrier with his customary quick start and then dropped into second place just off the pace, lying in wait like a tiger ready to pounce on his prey. Aladar broke in rather leisurely fashion and came from further back to challenge on the outside. With the indomitable spirit of a truly great horse, he began his ambitious assault on Affirmed in spite of his recent defeats at the hands of the latter, defeats that would have made any lesser thoroughbred stop trying. Speeding rapidly to the head of the field, Affirmed and Aladar came to the 3/8 pole eyeball to eyeball. Matching each other with stride for magnificent stride, they had covered the first mile in 1:37.2. Muscles strained to the bursting point, neither magnificent colt giving an inch. Their strides were in perfect synchronization with the respective riders in fluid motion as they pounded down the long Belmont stretch in what was truly poetry in motion. Then Aladar, in the moment everybody had waited for, stuck his nose out for just a mere fraction of an inch further than Affirmed. It seemed just for an instant that Aladar's long battle had finally been won. The prolonged intensity of that duel for the lead and the assertive move would well have given cause for most other horses to back off and settle for a most respectable second place. For a fleeting moment, it looked as if Affirmed would tire and slow down, but he reached down into the depths for that X-plus, that little something extra that only the great ones have, that which makes a thoroughbred a true champion. In one singularly bold display of the ultimate in courage, the little horse with the enormous heart gathered every ounce of power that was within him and thrust his nose a good 3 inches past that of Aladar. And that's the way it stayed as they hit the finish line. To this very day, the question is hotly debated. Which horse had more heart, the one who would not be beaten, or the one who kept being beaten but came back for each successive confrontation, trying harder and harder to win? You see, Aladar didn't know how to cry, and in that context he exemplified the consummate thoroughbred. But history shows, and the fact remains, it was Affirmed that had that intangible something extra, that X-plus. As Laz Barrera phrased it when, the following summer, the good little Triple Crown winner thundered home under an impost of 132 pounds to win the Hollywood Gold Cup and become the first thoroughbred to earn $2 million, quote, Affirmed is like my father. When you ask him for a quarter to go to the movies, he'd have to search all of his pockets, but you knew he'd find one somewhere, unquote. And by the way, there's a great sports trivia question emanating from that 1978 Triple Crown. Who was the only horse ever to run second in all three Triple Crown races? It was Aladar. No, indeed, thoroughbreds do not cry.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
First Samurai is America's best sire son of Champion Giants Causeway. Already the sire of a champion, First Samurai has Grade 1 winners on both coasts.
But it will be Justin Phillip to win the Vanderbilt by two.
As well as graded stakes horses around the country.
And Lee has won the Dawn under Joel Rosario.
Get happy, mister, in front. Get happy, mister, has won it.
First Samurai, a proven sire of quality at Claiborne Farm.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
power.
Caracol, the favorite in front. The Spaniard, News of Canarias, is fighting back. Caracol, the has won.
Passion.
Prestige Vendome is making him fight all the way towards the line. It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti with a rock on the outside goes Bannum. Late run from Adam Dahl. Caraconti and O'Dahl. Caraconti.
Gainesway is home to North America's leading sire, Tappet, and is proud to announce the addition of multiple group and grade one winner, Caraconti. One of the leading juveniles in Europe, Caraconti won the Group 1 Grand Criterium with a time form rating of 115, and at 3, he scored impressively in the Group 1 French 2000 Guineas and stormed home to win the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Mile at Santa Anita. Caraconti, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Don't miss Penn National's Holiday Racing Festival on Wednesday night, November 25th, when the legendary millionaire Ben's Cat tries to win his fourth consecutive running of the six-furlong, $200,000 Fabulous Strike Stakes. But it won't be easy, as his talented competition will be led by Favorite Tail, fresh off a sharp third-place finish in the $1 million Breeders' Cup Sprint. Post time for the Penn National Holiday Racing Festival is 6 p.m.
Airdrie Stud is proud to introduce Summer Front for the 2016 breeding season.
Summer Front and Joe Bravo have won.
A multiple graded stakes winning millionaire by the Great War Front, Summer Front began his career as an undefeated multiple stakes winner at 2 before going on to win graded stakes at 3, 4, and 5. Boasting a top-class pedigree and the jaw-dropping looks that made him a $475,000 sales horse. The explosiveness, the looks, and the pedigree to be a truly important sire. Airdrie Stud's Summer Front. Think about it.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Donza Cavallo is down at the rail. Then Cresold interrupted on the far outside. Mutatis Mutandis is down at the rail. It's Goldie Esponi, the one to catch. He's got a two-length lead. Here comes Donza Cavallo on the outside in second. Mutatis Mutandis is third. Then Courtesan, and got a chance to dance. Goldie Esponi trying to take him the entire way, and she has led every step of the 12 furlongs, and she wins the Long Island Handicap under Kendrick Carmouche.
That was John Embry-Howe on the call of the Long Island Handicap this past Saturday. Goldie Esponi won that one, and it was under Kendrick Carmouche. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile, pinch hitting for the Baron, Mike Penna, was on vacation, joined by the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, and HRRN Nation. Thanks for tuning in this Saturday morning. We are efforting to get Kendrick Carmouche on the phone. Before we deal with Kendrick, I got to tell you guys that as a 13-time leading stud farm, Lane's End has a proven track record of turning young stallions into leading sires. Like The Factor, the top freshman sire by a yearling average that's 15 times his stud fee. Or Union Rags, a grade one winning 2-year-old and classic winning 3-year-old who became the leading freshman sire by weanling average in 2014 and whose first yearlings realized up to $460,000. Then there's Twirling Candy, 2015's leading freshman sire by winners and 2-year-old average, and Quality Road, the leading first crop sire by earnings and graded stakes winners in 2014. When it comes down to it, Lane's End stallions are made for success. To learn more about breeding opportunities, visit lanesend.com. And they've added to their stallion roster, Jude, with Liam's Map and, of course, Honor Code.
Yeah, those are two terrific horses. And Lane's End does such a great job in the breeding shed with their sales. I mean, just a beautiful farm, first-class operation. And my good friend Alice Empson is part of the machine that's Lane's End Farm, and she does a great job over there.
You know, we're trying to get Kendra Carmouche on the line right now. We are efforting, I believe is the word. And it's a word I did not learn until coming here to HRRN, Jude. But we're efforting to get Kendrick. Sometimes these guys are on horses and actually working horses.
Yeah, so I think he's working one for Chad Brown. He's supposed to be working one for Chad Brown at 8:45, he told Lisa. We may catch him a little bit later.
Okay. I think Chad Brown might have a little more pull than me at this point.
Well, he's probably going to make more money with Chad Brown than he is being a guest on our show. Although, you never know. I got one of my best training jobs ever from a television appearance. So,
really?
Yes.
I need that story.
The guy was going to hire Mike Mitchell, Robert Marino, and he saw me on television. I was on a show. Gil Stratton used to the great Gil Stratton used to do a show for Santa Anita on Mondays and Tuesdays, and I was on the show, and he liked what I said on the show. He liked my philosophy and how I treated my horses and whatever, and so he called me and said, you know, I saw you on TV last night and I really liked what you said and I want to get in the business. He said, I'm going to Hawaii for a couple of weeks, but when I come back, I want to get together with you and want to claim a horse. So he became one of the leading breeders in California, and we had 32-year-olds every year coming to the barn.
Wow.
We had a pretty nice operation and won a bunch of races, and he liked to make a bet now and then. So one great story was he got a new girlfriend, and she came to the racetrack with him, and she had this little tiny what I would call an opera purse or a little tiny handbag, you know, enough for a lipstick and couple bucks, and I told her, I said, that will never do because you know, you're gonna have to have a big purse to put money in at the end of the day. Well, that day we won two on the card. We won the second race with both homebreds. We won the second race. The horse paid $63, and the horse in the feature race, ready to order, won the stakes that day, and he won $75,000 gambling, and she had to go to the Del Mar gift shop and get a knapsack to carry the money out on her back.
Wow.
And I didn't know that at the time, but the next time I saw her at the races at Oak Tree, she told me the story, and she goes, you were right about that. So she showed me this big, huge handbag that she had, so she she could carry the dough out with her. But anyway, yeah, it all came from a television appearance, so you never know who's listening, who's watching, and so there you have it.
In keeping with the theme of the morning, that being vodka, I was I mentioned this earlier in the show too. It's funny the story comes back up. Shoreline Star was a greyhound track up in Connecticut. It's a simulcast facility now. It was an old Hi-Li Fonton. And was up there one night with my folks and some friends and gave this like 3-minute diatribe to folks at my table, to all my friends and stuff, about how this horse was going to win at the Meadowlands. The Meadowlands was harness. And the horse won and paid $76. And everybody made a ton of money, cleaned up, and they get tapped on the shoulder. And like I said, I was, you know, I had a couple of cocktails in me. Dad was driving, so I was fine. And guy taps me on the shoulder. He says, you look familiar. I said, well, I write for the New York Post. He goes, yeah, I couldn't place it. Bob Beslov, I'm the general manager here. I said, okay. I said, you know, good to meet you, Bob. He says, dinner's on me tonight. I said, well, thanks. You didn't have to do that. He goes, well, I was listening to your very impassioned speech about the seven horse at the Meadowlands, and I bet 20 and 20 on her, and paid $76. You know, do you do any speaking engagements? And at the time, I hadn't. I was at the Post maybe a year and a half or 2 years. I hadn't done any radio or TV yet, and I said, I can. And the only time I ever got a gig with my big mouth You were nice and normal, I'm sure, on TV, but I was just spewing half-drunken nonsense at my friends. I wound up doing like 12 seminars up there, all the big racing days, and I used to give out the trophy to the big for the biggest stakes of the year. And had a few too many vodkas one night and actually almost fell over on top of the dog that won the race, which would have been phenomenal. Not too phenomenal a story, but yeah, the only time my big mouth ever really made me any money was that night. I don't remember the name of the horse, but I can tell you she paid $76, which is pretty good, especially in the harness game.
Yeah, no kidding.
So it doesn't look like Kendrick is going to be able to join us. Like Jude said, he's getting on one for Chad Brown, and you're probably right, Jude. He's probably going to make a little more money for Chad Brown. You know, wanted to talk to Kendrick this morning. I was always a big fan of Kendrick Carmouche, and, you know, I paid a little more attention up here to the East Coast racing. He always was one of the leading riders down at Parks and finally made his move here late last year into this year, and he's one of the leading riders here in New York right now. He's actually tied atop the standings. He's three wins shy of 2,700 races in his career. And it's funny that he's on one for Chad Brown this morning, because Chad's really been one to use him a lot. They went on a run last year at Parks where Chad won 10 of 11 and Kendrick rode all but one of them. And when he came here, Chad started using him, and he's won a couple of stakes now aboard that Philly Goldie Asfoni in those turf routes.
Yeah, you know, I was impressed with him during the summer watching him ride. He was kind of like a secret weapon. Seemed like he was really trying hard and a good guy to throw in your trifectas, because he was going to give it his best effort every time. And I think he's a pretty talented guy. So another one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, he's been, like I said, he's at 10 for 45 to start this Aqueduct meet. He actually went down in a spill, unfortunately, in the Woodford, down at Fall Stars weekend at Keeneland. The ill-fated Shorerunner, he went down. He complained of some chest pain. He had a little bit of a wrist injury, and he was on the shelf until October 28th. And when he came back, that was a Wednesday up here at Belmont. We had the Express Bet radio show. He won three in a row, and that's a heck of a way to come back from injury and, you know, just let everybody know, hey, I may have been gone, but don't forget me.
Yeah, well, that's it's always important to do that when you come back. Get on in the winner's circle as soon as possible, because it is a game of what have you done for me lately, and people have a tendency to forget. So, And there's always those questions, too. Is he 100%? Is he rushing himself back? All that stuff that people worry about when you're missing for a while.
Well, hopefully we'll catch up with Kendrick down the line. Let's take a break. When we come back a little later on, the top of the hour, 9 o'clock, Linda Rice will join us to talk about Palace and Hot City Girl, two big contenders down at Laurel today for their fall Festival of Racing. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
I'm back with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, why are we seeing more horsemen around the world using Flair strips?
Mike, I think more horsemen are realizing the simple fact that breathing easier is critical for horses' health and performance. When running, horses are bringing in about 10 bathtubs of air every minute through the narrowest part of the airway that collapses at speed. What the strips do is support the tissue in that region so it collapses less, so horses bring the air in more efficiently.
Breathe easy with Flair Strips. FlairStrips.com.
Introducing the Spendthrift for 2016 Palace, the multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire and fastest son of leading sire CityZip. Palace proved to be a leading sprinter in North America in 2014 and 2015, winning such New York staples as the Grade 1 Forgo Stakes, Grade 1 Vanderbilt Stakes, and Grade 2 True North Stakes. Palace is set to retire at season's end to Spendthrift. For more information on Palace, call us toll-free at 888-816-8787. That's 888-816-8787.
Have you been looking for high quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is the finest premium Western Timothy and alfalfa.
direct from Washington State. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Learn more by following Washington Hay Company on Facebook today.
Jude Feld, the pontiff of the Pick 4. You hear him on HRRN Radio. Now get his personal selections directly from him at his new site, PopeJude.com. Every analysis sheet at PopeJude.com has his personal selections and insights. Each page is a handicapping lesson packed with years of racing knowledge, coupled with insider information gleaned from the pontiff's countless connections in thoroughbred racing. Whether you're looking for another set of eyes on the past performances or inspired racing analysis to assault the windows, PopeJude.com is the site for you.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, inviting you to join me for Express Bet Radio on HRRN. Tune in for live racing action from around the country every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. It's the place to be on your drive home, through the final furlong of your workday, and for all fans of the sport of kings. It's Express Bet Radio on HRRN, on Sirius 220, XM 206, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net.
HRRN's newest show is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, Mike Penna and Christina McManigal will bring you exclusive interviews with the best jockeys in the business. Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, on Sirius 220 and XM 206. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information or to listen live.
Hi, this is Larry Colmus, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
As the field comes to the top of the stretch, Palace is right in behind the lead, and he dives to the inside with a menacing move as they enter the final furlong. And clearly now has got a lot to do. He's dropped five lengths behind. In the meantime, Palace has come through and has seized the lead, and Palace is pouring it on. Bijak comes through down toward the inside, and they're coming down to the finish, and Palace dazzles here and wins by 3.5 lengths. Big Business was second. Bijak was third. Final time, eye-catching, 121-4.
The incomparable Tom Durkin on the call of the 2014 four-go up the Old Spa. It was won by Palace, who figures to go off favored in the DeFrancis Memorial Dash a little later on down at Laurel. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile, sitting in for the vacationing Mike Penna, the Baron of the Backstretch. I'm up in New York, joined in our Lexington, Kentucky studios by the pontiff of the Pick 4, Jude Feld, on what should be a fantastic Saturday of racing. We got some stakes action across the country. Six down at Laurel for their fall festival of racing. And again, we'll be joined at the top of the hour by Linda Rice, who trains Palace, as well as Hot City Girl in the Safely Kept. Jude, these big days, and big day racing has really become the, for lack of a better term, the chic thing to do nowadays in the sport. You know, whether they're state bred days or, and you know, Laurel certainly has that with the Merrill Millions Day. They just had that back on October 17th. We have Empire Showcase Day here in New York on October 24th. It was actually the third state bred day of the year, races solely for New York breds. We had one at Belmont in the spring, one up at Saratoga that UI and the Baron covered the day before the Travers, and then that one in October on the 24th. Now, even after the Breeders' Cup, we see another one. California will have one. You a fan of these big days and these themed days?
Well, I have mixed emotions. I do like them. I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's great for HRRN purposes because a lot of times, you know, we'll be on the scene. I mean, almost every big race we cover now, and most of those are live at the racetrack. So it's a lot of fun to have those big days, and I've kind of gotten to the point where I really enjoy wagering on stakes races, and I've kind of gotten away from the cheaper races as far as wagering opportunities are concerned. But by the same token, I think it's kind of sad where you have a Saturday where there's not a stakes race at a lot of tracks because they lump them all together. The state bred days, I can understand that to a certain degree, but I do think it probably keeps some people from coming out because they figure, well, it's just a bunch of Calbreds running or just a bunch of New York breds. But, you know, like in New York, the horses are getting better and better all the time, the state bred horses. And, you know, it's interesting. There should be more of a balance. I can understand having like four or five stakes on a day. You know, like on Belmont Day or Preakness Day or something like that. But the rest of the year, I think people are entitled to see a really nice race whenever they go to the track, you know. I used to say I won a lot of races on Thursdays. Thursday's arguably the worst racing day of the week, and my horses always seem to fit better on Thursdays. But, you know, I mean I think the fans are, if you go to the races on a Saturday, you should be able to see a stakes race. That's just kind of how I feel. That's kind of old school, I guess. But I like the big days, but I wish there were stakes every day.
Do you think a day like Belmont Day with 10 graded stakes, 9 grade ones, do you think that's overkill, especially on a day like Belmont Stakes Day?
Well, people are going to go to the Belmont regardless, so it's not a matter of attraction. But I do think for handle, you know, and that's what drives our game, you know, is the handle. And I think for handle, it just makes it so attractive where people just have to participate. You're almost forced to participate on those days, you know, because and in a big way. I mean, you know. Like if you let's say you're gonna bet $20,000 over the course of the year, okay, which most people probably do and they don't even know it because with the churn right. And whatever. So if you're gonna ration that out, let's say you're gonna save, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 for those big days, right? And then divide the rest of the money amongst your horses to watch list, your, you know, trips to the track when you're going, you know, on a Thursday afternoon because you got nothing to do, or on a holiday weekend where, you know, you get a day of racing in that you wouldn't ordinarily get, like a Monday or something like that. So you're gonna take the bulk of that money. You're betting on Derby Day. Probably Oaks and Derby Day, but mostly Derby Day. You're going to bet the two Breeders' Cup days. You're going to bet Belmont Day for sure, right? So that's 5 days. So that's half of your bankroll is going to be bet on those 5 days. You know, Preakness Day, you know, is always a great wagering card. I love the Preakness. So that, if that was six, you know, there's $12,000. That gives you $8,000 left for the rest of the year. So I think that's how most fans break it up. I mean, you're gonna be firing away. The prices are ridiculous because at most of those big events, you have a lot of people, you know, especially the Triple Crown and the Breeders' Cup, you have a lot of people doing bucket lists. They don't know, you know, one horse from the other. And so there's a lot of money in the pools that's not particularly educated. So you're going to get better value. And certainly on Breeders' Cup Day, you get tremendous value because every horse is good. So the public can't be right in every race. So I mean, that's how I look at it. What do you think?
Well, I agree with a lot of what you said. And more important than what I think, I think the racetracks and the racing jurisdictions are on board with your mentality and methodology that they just, if you're going to come for these big days and you're going to fire away on these big days, we're going to let you fire away on the best product. And I'm a big fan of the Met Mile. The Metropolitan Handicap is one of my favorite races of the year. It always has been. I think part of that reason was I had my routine. I was off from school, work, whatever you want to say. I got up Monday morning, went to the track, came home, had my barbecue, but I got my Met Mile in. When that was taken away from me, I think I was a little upset. Yeah. And, you know, it didn't make sense to me. And especially as a New Yorker, I'm going to the Belmont anyway. I missed one Belmont in 27 years, and that's because it was a foot and a half of water in my basement. And I still almost went. So, to me, there was no reason. You want to put 5-6 stakes on the card, that's fine. But don't take a staple like the Met Mile and move it. But I got to say, they've done it for 2 years. I think it was the right move. Because, yeah, those people are out there. But, and again, it's a lot of it is uneducated money, if you will, and weekend warriors and people making their track debuts for the most part. I mean, we were at the Belmont this year. I've never seen more fedoras and bow ties in my life. These people aren't going to be back. You know, a lot of them won't be back. But anyway, it looks like this is what is the norm now in racing, and hopefully it'll attract some new fans. So, got a lot coming up for you in hour two. We're back with hour number two right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End.
The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
Songbird is just rolling past the eighth pole, has the lead by six. Rachel Valentina is in second, but there is absolutely no stopping Songbird.
Beholder, once again, is just making this look so easy. It is Beholder in an absolute canter, being geared down late by Gary Stevens. Beholder in a formality.
Stop Charging Maria, short lead. Stellar Wind is fighting on. Stop Charging Maria just keeps battling back. Stop Charging Maria wins the Longines Breeders' Cup Distaff.
Now, here's Anthony Stabile and Jude Feld.
Welcome back to hour number two of the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile, sitting in for the Baron of the Backstretch, Mike Penna, joined by the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, and you, HRR Nation. Thanks for tuning in on this Super Saturday here in November. A little chilly up here in New York. Got the wind blowing pretty strongly as they're training here on the main track at the Big A. Speaking of the Big A, our next guest has won an awful lot of races here at Aqueduct, but today she will be in action down at Laurel with a couple of the favorites in two of the six stakes on Laurel's Fall Festival of Racing card. Hot City Girl and La Verdad were joined now by their trainer, Linda Rice. Linda, thanks for taking some time on the Equine Forum this morning. It's Anthony Stabile and Jude Feld.
Hi, Anthony. Hi, Jude. How are you today?
Good.
Doing good, Linda. So, Hot City Girl has done her share of traveling already this fall, heading out to Charlestown and back at Belmont and now down to Laurel. How's she doing coming into the race today, Linda?
She's doing great. I mean, frankly, I'm bringing her back on short rest from the Belmont allowance win. It's a little over 2 weeks, and it's back in short rest, but frankly, it's one of the last three-year-old filly stakes races of the year, and she's came out of the last couple races very well, so we decided to go ahead and take her down.
You mentioned the last two races. Blinkers on for her last two starts, and they really have seemed to do the trick.
Yeah, you know, I think the blinkers certainly have helped her focus, but I also believe, you know, we kind of gave her a break over the summer and give her a chance to catch up, and the time helped her as much as the blinkers.
Yeah, that happens a lot when you give a horse a little break. Sometimes they come back gangbusters. I think some trainers are afraid to you know, send them out or give them a little time off even at the barn, but it seems to work so well. And this filly, I mean, her speed figures have just jumped immeasurably since she's come back.
Yeah, you know, with this filly, I kept her at Belmont and just gave her a break, and she, you know, I picked out a couple spots. I had her in the prior race at Saratoga. She was in the one hole in like a 14-horse field with Cavorting in there. And I opted to scratch her that day and took her to Charlestown. Of course, that worked out great. You know, it was a 6-horse field. I think we went off about third choice. But the filly has been training. She's been improving month after month, let's say since probably July, August, September. And I'm hoping, as her half-sister, Labradad, did, she looks to me to be a horse that, you know, is improving with age and maturity.
Speaking of Labradad, another fantastic job right off the Iroquois into that Breeders' Cup filly and mare sprint. A really just a solid race. And you pulled a little bit of a move there. You took her off the pace in the Iroquois, and everybody thought, I think, going into the Breeders' Cup that would be the game plan. But instead, she flaunted her immense speed and just missed to an old foe in Wavell Avenue.
Yes, you know, the idea was to see if we could rate in the Iroquois. You know, hoping that if we could rate her behind horses, if she could run from off the pace just a little bit, that it would improve our chances to win a grade one at 7 furlongs. You know, of course, when the gates open, you know, as usual, I just left it up to the rider. I just don't like to tie their hands. They just have to play it the way it comes up. It didn't go in 21 and change. It was 22-2, and Jose found himself in the lead post-position part of it. And, you know, I left. It was his choice to make. He decided to leave her on the front end, and she did as well as she could.
When the original plan was to sell her at the Keeneland November sale, I know you guys took her out of there. What's the plans for her now, Linda?
Yeah, I had, you know, encouraged Sheila to put her in the November sale, you know, months ago. I just felt that she needed to have that option when the time came. But as we got closer to the sale and closer to the sale, Sheila was, you know, she just doesn't want to part with her. She's attached to her, which, you know, is easy to understand. And so I believe that will be her first and only broodmare. We plan to run her once more for this year against the colts in the fall highway, is what we have scheduled right now. After that, she'll probably go to Kentucky, and we're looking at, you know, a few stallions right now. We haven't really decided which one yet.
All right, so the fall highway now becomes a race to circle on your calendars here up in the Big Apple. You get one more chance to see the great Labradad in action. She'll take on the boys in that fall highway. Another boy that we need to talk about is Palace, who, when all is said and done, may be one of the top five claims in the history of the sport. A lot of people forget that this horse actually started in the barn of Hall of Famer Bill Mott. You claimed him for the bargain basement price of $20,000, and all he's done since is win 11 races, including 2 grade ones, and $1.4 million.
Yeah, he's, you know, we claimed him in October of 2012, maiden 20. And, you know, Windstar had owned him, and he'd run 2 kind of average thirds, maiden special weight, never got to the races as a 2-year-old, fell down on the turf, and they'd had the horse in the sale in Kentucky as basically one of the horses that they were going to cull. I think Billy Mott just took a chance of, you know, what the hell, we might as well win a race with him. And so, you know, we claimed him for 20. We were the only ones in for him that day. And, of course, it's been, you know, a real joy having him the last 3 years. He's just been wonderful to have in the barn. And he's going on to his new career as of January 1st. He's going to be a standing stud at Spencer Farm. And it'll be hard to see him go. You know, he's been such a joy for us.
Yeah, 12 wins and 27 starts. Awesome. You're putting the blinkers on. Is that kind of to shake the old boy up?
A little bit. You know, it's exactly what it is. I've kind of wanted to do it in the past, and for whatever reason I didn't. Right now I just kind of wake him up a little bit. I thought it might sharpen him up just a touch, and then we'll see what happens from there.
Is this his swan song?
No, not necessarily. You know, we'll see how he runs today. he could also come back in a fall high weight. He could wait for the Graves end. We can run him to the end of the year. I don't know that today will be his last race. I don't think it will be. I think we'll run him one more time after this.
Okay. So we have Hot City Girl in the barn to take the mantle from La Verdad when she goes on to become a brood mare. We have anything to look forward to, Linda, as far as maybe replacing Palace? Anything in the barn that our fans should keep an eye on?
You know, I bought some pretty nice two-year-olds this last spring, and I'm hoping that some of those really come together and rise to the top, because those are, you know, having La Verdad go to the breeding shed and Palace, it's going to be a difficult winter to get through. You know, our barn's going to be pretty sad about that. But, you know, here they are. Palace is 6 years old, turning seven. La Verdad's five, turning six. They're both sprinters. They're both New York breds, and they're both sound. And, you know, to watch them go on to their new careers, what we need to do what's best for them. But I'm hoping some of these two-year-olds that we bought this last spring will fill their shoes. We've got Matt King Cole running in the Remsen in a couple of weeks. And so we've got high hopes for him and Seymour Danny, a few other two-year-olds. So hopefully they will develop nice careers as well.
When you started doing this, training horses in 1987, did you ever think that you'd be 21 wins away from 1,400?
You know, I never considered anything like that. You know, I grew up in Hershey, Pennsylvania. My father was leading trainer in Pennsylvania for about 15 years while I was in, you know, grade school and high school and college. And I really didn't set out to be a horse trainer, but that's just the way it turned out.
That's a beautiful part of the country. I'll tell you, I got to make my first trip to Penn National, and I realized probably when you were younger, Penn National wasn't what it's like now. But what a beautiful area. I mean, it's just breathtaking up there.
Oh, yeah. So it's a great place to grow up. Three older brothers all in the business, and we grew up in the business. And so after college, I found myself here at Belmont Park.
Well, I think Linda and I like Hershey, Pennsylvania for far different reasons.
You must be a Hershey Bears fan.
Linda Rice, winner of over 1,300 races, thank you for joining us this morning for a few minutes. Best of luck today with Hot City Girl and Palace, and of course, in the coming weeks with the old mare, La Verdad. Thanks, Linda.
Thank you, Anthony. Thank you,
Jude. Bye-bye.
All right, Linda Rice. She's good, man. She wins a lot of races on this circuit. And, you know, like I said, Judah, close to 1,400 wins now and does it on the grandest stage of them all in this country.
Yeah, which, you know, the thing I like about Linda Rice is she's not afraid to do anything. You know, she'll run La Verdad back quick, you know. She's kind of an old school trainer, really. You don't, I never really consider her an old school trainer, you know. I don't know, but she is. Just the way she trains her horses, you know, the thought she puts into what they do, the races that she points for. I mean, she does a great job. Am I correct? The only woman trainer to win Saratoga?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's a tough thing to do. It's a tough thing for a man or a woman to do. But, I mean, the mere fact that she pulled that off is amazing, because still in our business, women don't get the best shakes sometimes. And I can say that because my father had a woman trainer in the 1950s. She was the only gal to have stalls at Santa Anita at that time, a lady named Mary G. Ellis. So my family has a history of women trainers and jockeys, but it's unbelievable that she pulled that off, because that's a prize that practically every trainer in the United States would like to have that on their resume, leading trainer at Saratoga.
And if you think about it, Jude, how you know she pulled that off, she defeated Todd Pletcher. And you'd have to think, just doing some quick math, she was probably outgunned in horse flesh 2 or 3 to 1.
Oh, yeah, no question. No question. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. Really, really cool.
And she referenced her dad, Clyde, who won 15. She said the leading trainer in Pennsylvania for 15 years. If you've ever had the chance to sit down and talk to Clyde Rice, and I have, let me tell you something. A dearth of knowledge. I mean, you can just glean so much from him, and you can tell it's really rubbed off on Linda.
Yeah, it's a great family, great racing family, and she does a super, super job.
You've trained a bunch of stakes winners, Jude. What's it like when you know, I'm sure you've been in the position where you've had a filly or mare getting ready to go off to the breeding shed. What's it like knowing that there's going to be a little bit of a void in the barn? Are you pressing to try and fill that spot, or do you just let the chips fall where they may?
I don't know. I don't think there's really anything you can do. I mean, you just have to keep doing the work every day and hope that another one comes along. I had that situation with Veal Vin, a filly that I won the Chula Vista at Del Mar Grade 2, which is now I think the Clement Hirsch, and it's a Grade 1. But, you know, she won $500,000. For me, on the dirt, she was a turf filly in France, and it rained the day that she made her American debut, and everybody wanted to scratch. There was only one horse that didn't want to scratch out of the race, and I had put in a scratch card, and the racing department had contacted me and asked me if I'd watch a couple races and see. And as I was watching the races, I could see that she had a big chance to win. She had a great post. Lafitte Pink Eye was riding her, and speed wasn't sticking, and I knew she'd, you know, sit a perfect trip. So I left her in, and she won that day in the dirt, in the mud, and then went on to have a really, really good career on the dirt. And it's kind of surprised the owners and everybody else, but she was a very nice filly, and she ran in the Chula Vista three times. But you know, when she left to come to Kentucky to be sold, I it was kind of sad. And we actually have a picture of me in the studio here with her as I was putting her on the van. When I come to the studio, I always take a peek at that picture. She was awesome, and you know, you can't replace a horse like that. I mean, they're just irreplaceable, you know.
It's amazing. No matter what stage of the game or what level of the game you're at, the losses in any way, you know, like my dad had one breakdown on him right here at Ackworth, the horse named Rockville Center, and he had to give up training for 8 years. He couldn't do it anymore. So he lost one really the wrong way. But even when they, you know, when they're being retired for the right reasons and going off the stud, I remember the day Go Zapper was retired. I was doing a TV show for New York City OTB, and my dad and I had a great relationship with the late, great Bobby Frankel. And Bobby called my dad, and I had just started hosting the show. He goes, "Let Junior get off here. I'm not going to announce it, and I'll do it on the show." So we had Bobby on, and we broke the news on the show, and I was a huge, huge Go Zapper fan. So I went to the barn a couple of mornings later when he was going to leave for Adina, and Bobby was, I don't want to say he was inconsolable, but like you couldn't talk to him. He was just, you could tell he just wasn't there. He just kept watching the horse, and I got a couple of really great shots of me taking Go Zapper for a couple of spins, just walking him outside, and be careful with him, and, you know, you fat, be careful with him. Still, you know, just screaming.
Always
at
so
me.
Complimentary, Bobby.
Always, yeah, exactly. Just screaming at the top of his lungs at me, and Jose Cuervo came over. He said, "That's the most he said in like 3 days." I said, "Oh, you know, you can't. It's Go Zapper. You know, how are you going to replace a horse?" And, you know, you think about a guy like Bobby Frankel, who's trained champion after champion after champion, and he was just, you know, completely, you know, like he lost his best friend. And, you know, I'd have to imagine, you know, again, being around horses my whole life, my dad never had anything in his barn of that ilk. But, you know, I could just imagine what it's like to see a money winner. And then, of course, you know, like Linda said, she's had this horse for 3 years. There has to be some sort of an attachment to these horses.
Yeah, well, you know, the longer they're around, and it's, you know, it's nice when they're around a long time. And like I said, my filly had run in the same stakes race at Del Mar 3 years in a row, and they become part of the fabric of your barn. And you know, I mean, I had another horse named Broadway Point who was a really good sprinter, and he was around a long time and in the first stall, and he was a big character, you know. As a matter of fact, he was so funny. One day I had a girl that was working for me that was wearing a tube top, and she walked by the stall, and he grabbed her tube top and ripped it off of her. And there she's standing bare-chested in the middle of the shed row, and she ran into my office. It was pretty funny. The guys were going crazy, and it was one of those racetrack moments that you can just never get back. You almost wish you had it on film. But it was a classic, and he was always in the first stall, and he was just one of those horses that would mess with you, play with you, never mean, never bite or kick, but just do crazy stuff. And you know, when he left the barn, it was another sad day. So, yeah, you get to liking him. And you mentioned Bobby Frankel. I mean, I don't think anybody really that didn't know Bobby Frankel realized how much he loved animals and how much he loved his horses and his dogs. I mean, his dogs meant everything to him.
That was his life. His dogs were his life.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him with the, you know, horses, and like he would lay down in the stall with them, and you know, horses that were injured or had issues, and he would, you know, he would really take care of them and be up close and personal with them, and I don't think a lot of people realized that about him. I mean, he was always, you know, he always exuded that kind of jerky persona, you know.
Yes.
But it
when
wasn't.
You tell people those stories, they look at you out of the corner of your eye like you're nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's absolutely true. And anybody that knew him well knew how much he cared about his horses and just, you know, took great delight when they would do something well. He was, you know, a guy, he would claim a lot of old horses.
Yes.
You know, the horses that had issues. He claimed a horse off of my mother's gynecologist one time, who fashioned himself a trainer. And this horse, his name was Strong Award. I wrote an article about him a long time ago, and he had a one eye, and he won a stakes with this horse when he was like 9 years old. I mean, he kind of felt sorry for the horse because he didn't think the old doctor was taking care of him the way he should, and he claimed him and you know, just moved the horse right up. I think he's a Washington bred. Anyway, he's a really, really cool horse, Strong Award. And you know, Bobby just took such delight in having that horse, you know, return to his former glory, or have him run as best as he could, or just making those horses happy. You know, that was a big delight for him.
Yeah, one of the best of all time. I mean, we could sit here. I know you and I could certainly sit here for hours just telling Bobby Frankel stories. But he is...
It's only a two-hour show.
It's only a two-hour show, yeah. One of a kind. It's time now for the Blood Horse News Update. And a look at the top headlines from BloodHorse.com. Lucas recognized for Texas A&M donation. Hall of Fame trainer Dwayne Lucas, during a recent trip to Texas A&M University in College Station, was recognized not only for his success on the racetrack, but also for his generosity in sharing a piece of racing history with students at the college. During an October 12th ceremony recognizing donors to the Thomas G. Hildebrand DVM 56 Equine Complex, Lucas was honored for donating more than 40 pictures of the 26 Eclipse Award-winning horses he trained to be on permanent display at the Hildebrand Complex. The display was dedicated as the Dwayne Lucas Gallery of Racing. The display features win pictures from major races such as the Kentucky Derby, Preakness Stakes, Belmont Stakes, and Breeders' Cup. And that wraps up this morning's edition of the Blood Horse News Update. For more racing and more industry news, please visit BloodHorse.com. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by the voice of Maryland Racing, Dave Rodman. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Lane's End.
And they're off to New York. the premier state bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, what would be a common misunderstanding between an insured and the insurance company?
Mike, one issue is a policy condition that requires notification when an insured animal becomes sick or injured.
Do you mean in life-threatening situations?
Not just then, but if a veterinarian is called in for treatment other than routine care. Take, for example, if a yearling colt gets his foreleg caught in a fence and tears the skin. The coat is stitched up and everything seems fine, but later the coat develops a systemic infection. Then there is a serious situation that the company knows nothing about.
So the company needs to know, even if it's not a life-threatening situation.
That's right. It's a policy condition. The company has a stake in the health of the animal because of the existing insurance policy. The company might want to have its own vet examine the horse. In most cases, though, just a call or email is all that is needed.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
Kitten's Joy.
Big blue kitten wins the United Nations for the second time in 3 years.
A champion sire.
And Stephanie's kitten has won the Flower Bowl.
The number one turf sire in America.
Bobby's kitten like a rocket out of nowhere.
Kitten's Joy, one of the premier stallions in North America, continues to produce young rising stars, including impressive debut winner Camelot Kitten, a full brother to Breeders' Cup winner Bobby's Kitten. Kitten's Joy, standing at Ramsey Farm.
Don't miss Penn National's Holiday Racing Festival on Wednesday night, November 25th, when the legendary millionaire Ben's Cat tries to win his fourth consecutive running of the six-furlong, $200,000 Fabulous Strike Stakes. But it won't be easy, as his talented competition will be led by Favorite Tail, fresh off a sharp third-place finish in the $1 million Breeders' Cup Sprint. Post time for the Penn National Holiday Racing Festival is 6 p.m.
Power.
Caracol did a favorite in front. The Spaniard News Alcanares is fighting back. Caracol has won.
Passion.
Prestige Vendome is making him fight all the way towards the line. It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti with a rock on the outside goes Bantam. Lead run from Adam Dahl. Caraconti and O'Dahl. Caraconti.
Gainesway is home to North America's leading sire, Tappet, and is proud to announce the addition of multiple group and grade one winner, Caraconti. One of the leading juveniles in Europe, Caraconti won the Group 1 Grand Criterium with a time form rating of 115, and at 3, he scored impressively in the Group 1 French 2000 Guineas and stormed home to win the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Mile at Santa Anita. Caraconti, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Finger Painter's the leader at the eighth pole. Sound of the Storm closing with Mekki's Madeline in the center of the racetrack. Finger Painter for Tim Murphy. Mekki's Madeline to the outside, closing with every stride. Here comes Mekki's Madeline.
Two-year-old Mekki's Madeline, the daughter of Darley Stallion Desert Party, ran her record to a perfect 2-for-2 after winning the She's a Stone Cold Fox Stakes last Friday. At Finger Lakes, the New York bred filly closed powerfully from off the pace, and her winning effort makes her your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Desert Party is a superb-looking son of Street Cry, who sold for $2.1 million as a two-year-old. A runaway winner of the Grade 2 Sanford Stakes, his first crop features no fewer than seven graded or stakes horses, including Group 3 winner Salama. Learn more about Desert Party and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Point given on the outside and Congaree. Baffert runners 1-2 as they turn for home. Richly Blended gives way. AP Valentine is next. Marcia on the outside. Monarchos driving. Not going anywhere. There's one furlong to go. Point given. Congaree. AP Valentine. He's running his race today. 16th of a mile to go. Point given. The real Point given is showing up at Pimlico to take the Preakness. AP Valentine. Congaree. Dollar Bill. Griffinite. Monarchos was next, followed by Marciano Bay, Eagle, Percy Hope, and Richly Blended, and last across the line was Mr. John, and the running time was 1:55.2.
When you format the show, you get to pick your favorite clips, and that's my favorite Dave Rodman call, the 2001 Preakness. Point given, the real Point given, showed up that day, started a pretty impressive win streak that would end in the Travers. Welcome back to the Equine Forum, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am the Big A, Anthony Stabile, sitting in for the vacationing Mike Penna, joined by the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, and we'll be joined in just a moment by Dave Rodman, the voice of Maryland Racing. But first, I have to tell you folks that as a 13-time leading stud farm, Lane's End has a proven track record of turning young stallions into leading sires, like The Factor, the top freshman sire by a yearling average that's 15 times his stud fee. Or Union Rags, a grade 1 winning 2-year-old and classic winning 3-year-old who became the leading freshman sire by weanling average in 2014 and whose first yearlings realized up to $460,000. Then there's Twirling Candy, 2015's leading freshman sire by winners and 2-year-old average, and Quality Road, the leading first crop sire by earnings and graded stakes winners in 2014. When it comes down to it, Lane's End stallions are made for success. To learn more about breeding opportunities, visit lanesend.com. Nice enough now to be joined by Dave Rodman, the voice of Pimlico and Laurel. Dave will be on the mic today for all six of those Fall Festival of Racing stakes down at Laurel in Maryland. Dave, it's Anthony Stabile and Jude Feld. Thanks for joining us this morning on the Equine Forum.
Thanks for having me, Anthony. Hi, Jude. How are you?
Good. Nice to hear your voice.
Mm-hmm. It's an exciting time today with the Fall Festival of Racing with all the stakes, but you know, just in general here in Maryland, very, very optimistic and upbeat kind of meet we're having, you know, big fields and all the improvements that were done. And the weather's just perfect today, so we're looking for a big crowd out at the track live at least, and hopefully people will be wagering across the country on the stakes too.
I know you've had some wet weather down there earlier in the week. You said the weather's good today. How's the track, Dave?
Oh, it should be great. It should be great. I mean, we ran Wednesday, and we're off the turf on Wednesday after some pretty heavy rain on Tuesday, and that actually helped the main track. It was rated good pretty much throughout the afternoon, even with all the rain. And the times were a good, legitimate, quick, but, you know, not ultra, ultra fast. And, you know, Laurel's a pretty fair kind of track anyway. So we've had a couple of days of sunshine now. This will be the second day of sunshine. We had a lot of wind yesterday and still a windy kind of morning today, so the track's in great shape.
When six stakes in all, like I said today, highlighted by that Frank J. DeFrancis Memorial Dash. Good bunch down there, Stallwalk and Dude. We just talked to Linda Rice. She has Palace. What are you looking for out of that DeFrancis Dash today?
Well, I mean, the race, obviously, I think, will go through Palace. And I did listen to Linda, and I'm glad you asked, you know, why the blinker's on all of a sudden. For Palace, even coming off of a win in the Hudson at Belmont. And, you know, he's just kind of a horse who's seemingly lagging third, fourth early stages, and maybe we'll see a little more early speed out of him today with the blinkers on, kind of shake him up a little bit, get him closer to the pace, you know. And handicapping the race without the equipment change, you would think that maybe he's going to settle from right off of it, you know, as he did in his grade one wins in the Vanderbilt and the Forgo. But now with the blinkers on, you know, it'll be interesting to see that opening two furlongs and where he's placed and how aggressive he is, if he gets aggressive at all. But, you know, on paper, it looks like he should come from off. If the race goes through him, I mean, Stallwalk and Dude and Gentleman's Bet are the two intriguing horses to me. from post two, the Jacobson barn. You know, the stall-walking dude is in really super form right now. I mean, he was third behind Rockfall and the Vosburgh, and went back and reviewed that race yesterday. And it looks like, you know, the Rockfall, the 2-5 favorite, kind of had a better trip in the race than stall-walking dude did, just in my opinion. And the stall-walking dude was kind of hung out wide, had to make that move, made the lead at the eighth pole. And, you know, he got Trevor McCarthy on him today, and I can guarantee you Trevor knows this track, you know, right and left. He knows how to ride this track. So breaking from an inside gate, I suspect he'll try to save that ground. And then in the outside-ish gentleman's bet, you know, a horse who had a long time away off between 2013 and 15, came back with a bang at Oaklawn with a huge, huge race. You know, beat Ivan Fall in Love a lot, who was ninth in the Breeders' Cup sprint. And, you know, you got to excuse his last race at Keeneland on a sloppy track, 11-horse field. He was in post two, kind of buried inside a little bit. Run Happy beat him that day. And Holy Boss, who was fourth in that race, ran solid as well in the Breeders' Cup. So, I mean, Gentleman's Bet is kind of the intriguing horse, lightly raced, 15 tries as a six-year-old. And so those are the two, to me, that would have a best chance to probably beat the favorite in the dash. I did want to mention one thing to you guys. At six furlongs here, the inside gate, not necessarily a prominent draw for sprints here at Laurel. They're struggling, that post position, number one. I mean, I'd sure like to see Cutty Shark come back and run his best race. He's got post one. He's a very nice horse, and he lost all chance last time out, stumbling at the start. And a race that really wasn't a true race. There, a couple of the favorites down inside in post one and two kind of bobbled, stumbled. And then Majestic Asar, who was gritty in victory, got away with a 24-47 and two. So, I mean, you can see a reversal here from Cutty Shark, but he's certainly up against it with that post draw today.
That's interesting because, you know, he's going to be a decent price too.
Yeah, I mean, he's run close to 100 buyer figures, and looking at, you know, looking at Palace, looking at Stall-Walking Dude, and, you know, looking at Gentleman's Bet, you know, they've all won triple-digit numbers. But certainly you've got to draw a line through his last race when he was basically, after a half mile, you know, out of the race. So it was kind of a prep. I think they wanted to get maybe one more prep into him. But post one has been a toughie here, sprinting on the dirt, at six furlongs in the dirt. Six furlongs, I should say, in the dirt. Seven furlongs, a different story.
Well, there should be plenty of pace on in here. You have Trouble Kid from the outside for Ramon Preciado. We had Bruce Brown, the trainer of Spring to the Sky, on Express Bet Radio during the week. I believe we had him on Thursday. And, you know, he said he's going to tell Mike Luzzi, go as fast as you can, as far as you can. So it seems like there'll be plenty of pace on in here as well.
Yeah, well, you know, you're talking about Palace as a former claimer. Here's a horse that was a $15,000 claimer. It started for $12,500. And, you know, I was wondering why the reversal there. And you can see now that the form has the gelding lines in, I guess it was simply they gelded him, and he's won four straight, including grade three at Parks. And he's got some early zip. You know, and if Palace continues kind of his lagging third and fourth or fifth kind of mode, and I know Cutty Shark doesn't have any early speed, unless Stall-Walking Dude can pop up with some zip, you know, he's going to be rocking out there on the pace.
Yeah, from a race that's packed with speed, that the Francis, it looks like Linda's runner in the Safely Kept Hot City Girl should have things to herself on the front end, just a race prior going seven furlongs in that Safely Kept.
Yeah, the Safely Kept seven furlongs, a very interesting race. I mean, the blinkers last two times out for Hot City Girl, you know, she seems to be running a little bit better. Than the buyer numbers have certainly improved by leaps and bounds with the blinkers. The question is she really a seven furlong, you know, type horse? And she'll be rocking on the lead. I mean, she failed at seven furlongs last time she tried it on this track behind a horse she'll face again today, Gypsy Judy, the Robin Graham horse. You know, Robin Graham's been known to pull some upset. Jackson the Deck recently beat Ben's Cat. You know, she's pulled up numerous upsets in the past. Yeah, she'll be rocking. I mean, maybe Tricky Zippy. I mean, if Hot City Girl flashes out there, I think your worry is going to be that last 16th of a mile. I mean, she's won going 7/8, but that was at Charlestown, where if you've got early lead, the early lead into the first turn, and have the kind of foot that Hot City Girl does into the first turn, the race is pretty much over by the time you settle down the backstretch with 4 furlongs left to go. And so, you know, should you toss her? I don't think so. But there's other options to use in your ticket, like Tricky Zippy, and second to La Verdad. There's nothing wrong with that running line. Darling Sky is kind of an interesting horse. Robert Reed doesn't have a huge win percentage here at Laurel, but he started out a lot of long shots as well. And she's kind of an off-the-pace kind of settling horse. And Eloquent Tribute is very interesting, too, out of a kind of a double-key race where Theophilia, the third-place finisher in that allowance race at Saratoga, came back to win her next two. She seems to be in top form coming into the race. I mean, that's an open race. I think it's kind of a spreadable race there in the Safely Cup.
Anything else on the card that caught your eye today, Dave?
Oh, yeah. Well, I looked at them all. So there's so many really good races. I think let me see. Let me start for the third. Let's go back. Let's just do it from the top. I mean, Table Jumper from the Ham Smith barn, you know, is certainly the strong local horse here, but again, got that post at 6 furlongs, post one. So I may be looking at Twirl Girl and Lost Raven in that race in the third. And the fifth race, I mean, everybody's kind of anxious to see what's becoming a fan favorite around here, Paige McKinney. He's such a hard-trying horse. He got beat by Duff last time out at his big price. He got 20 cents to a dollar, but they've given him some time off. He had kind of a long summer, and he seems to be coming back now for a barn that's doing nothing wrong now, the Mary Epler barn, solid trainer. The City of Laurel is a very interesting 7-furlong sprint today. Here you see Duff, the horse that beat Paige McKinney, who's looming at 20-1 on the line. I mean, he might be worth a flyer or two. The return, hopefully return to form there of El Kabir from the Terra Nova barn. People had so many high hopes for him earlier this season as a 3-year-old. And also in that race, Fortuitous Path, I think, has the best path post position to kind of stalk and pounce on the group in there. The third place finisher out of that race, I think it's Alex the Terror, came back to run a pretty decent buyer fig next time out at Aqueduct in her next start. And she's going to get a great, great trip. I don't know who's riding her, by the way. Unfortunately, Sheldon Russell's going to be out for about 4 to 6 months. He's really banged up his shoulder the last week. He's going to need surgery. A horse broke down in the morning with him. He's been very, very unlucky, and he was just making a comeback in the jockey standing. So I'm not sure where the rider there, and so we wish a speedy recovery to Sheldon. But Fortuitous Path looks like he ought to be, really tough in that spot. And the James Lewis races at the eighth on the program. I really like the way this colt, Awesome Speed, finished off here at Laurel in his maiden run. I mean, the buyer figure doesn't do it much justice. He ran a 72 versus the 6-5 favorite, who has that one post draw again at 6 furlongs. 72 for Awesome Speed versus a pair of 85s. But you go back and look at that race. Just look at it in that last 16th of a mile. He was just getting in the gear in that last 70 to 100 yards. He's a horse that can run all day. I think this is a really nice horse. He's going to make some noise down in the future here. Awesome Speed. He got beat at Parks. You know, a lot of people just don't like, a lot of horses don't like that track. And he did rebound at a nice price here in a better than buyer figure looking performance there. And he's by Awesome again. I mean, he could be kind of horse who's just going to improve another 10, 15 points this afternoon in the Lewis. He would be kind of be a really nice play today to spice up any of your pick fours or pick fives.
Well, Dave, great job, as always, breaking this card down today. Best of luck today, and looking forward to hearing you on that Fall Festival of Racing down at Laurel a little bit later on this afternoon.
Yeah, we appreciate the time and coming on this morning, and you guys take care.
All right, Dave Rodman, the racetrack announcer down at Pimlico, and Laurel, you hear him all afternoon at Laurel for their fall festival of racing. Time for one more break. When we come back, Jude and I will talk about a couple of the stakes that will be heading your way later on this Saturday. Here in the U.S., it's Saturday everywhere, but we'll talk about the U.S. racing this afternoon. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Tollgate Hay Company in Georgetown, Kentucky is family owned and operated and offers top quality local and northern hay and straw. At Tollgate Hay Company, you'll find hay in both large and small squares with western hay available upon request. Are you in need of bagged shavings or the best in McCauley's feed? Tollgate Hay has you covered. So call today, 502-542-8343. That's 502-542-8343. Tollgate Hay Company.
Click, order, eat. The new way of ordering Jimmy John's Freaky Fast, Freaky Good Sandwiches is a trend that's sweeping the country. With me tonight to discuss this amazing phenomenon is Ed Stephanopoulopoulos.
Hello.
America's favorite sandwich delivery guy.
That's not entirely true, Bob.
Excuse me?
Technically, all Jimmy John's delivery guys are America's favorite sandwich delivery guys, not just me.
I see. Okay, but we're here tonight to...
Actually, what I just said wasn't entirely true either, Bob. See, some of Jimmy John's delivery guys are actually delivery gals.
All right, so now we...
Or women, or ladies, or females, or persons of the non-male gender.
Ed, could we...
Although I guess that would be a mouthful.
A what?
I mean, if I had to say America's favorite sandwich delivery women or ladies, or females or persons of a non-male gender.
Okay, let's say that regardless of whether your Jimmy John's sandwich will be delivered by a guy or a gal...
Or a woman or...
The fact remains that now you can order that sandwich online using Jimmy John's amazing Click Order Eat system.
That's correct, sir.
And what would you say is the basis of that system, Ed?
The what?
The basis, the essence, the sine qua non.
It's Click Order Eat, Bob.
Moving along here, Ed, what would you say has made Click Order Eat so wildly popular?
Well, what do you think, Bob?
It's freaky fast.
Bingo, Bob.
Click, order, eat. Jimmy John's freaky fast new online ordering system.
You sound just like a commercial, sir.
If it happens in horse racing, it happens on HRRN.
Stop charging. Maria wins the Longines Breeders' Cup Distaff. It is all Songbird. Mike Smith aboard, crushing the field. He's an everlasting credit to the sport. American Pharoah has belted a grand slam in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Racing's biggest events are right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Isabella Sings coming to the top of the stretch in front. She's joined now by, on the outside, Divine Aida, and in the middle of the course, Bipartisan Politics. And these two have taken over after three quarters and 1/10 flat. And here's Partisan Politics to take the lead. Divine Aida battles with her from the inside. Up into third is Consumer Credit. Partisan Politics and Javier Castellano have the lead close to home. And Partisan Politics prevails in the pebbles. And then it was Divine Aida, followed by Consumer Credit and Isabella Sings.
Larry Comas on the call of the pebbles. Partisan Politics got it done last time. She heads a field of 14 with four AEs at Churchill today in the Grade 2, Mrs. Revere. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile, sitting in for the vacationing Baron of the Backstretch, Mike Penna, joined by the Pontiff of the Pick 4, Jude Feld, and you, HRRN Nation. Thanks for tuning in on this Saturday morning. Got some responses, Jude, to our poll question of the day. I asked you guys earlier on if you think Victor Espinoza should be under consideration for an Eclipse Award for Outstanding Jockey this year for his remarkable ride aboard American Pharoah. Eric Calais jumped in on Twitter, said Espinoza won first Triple Crown in 37 years and BC Classic with American Pharoah. Grand Slam a deciding factor, plus one for Victor Espinoza. Charlie Horse chimed in with the award is for Outstanding Jockey, not Leading Jockey, and his year was certainly outstanding. And then FL Hoop 3 said that consideration, yes, think he would win if based on Triple Crown and earnings per grade one start. So there's HR and Nation chiming in a little bit on what they think about Espinoza and consideration for that Eclipse Award, Jude.
Yeah, that's not surprising. I think most people are pretty impressed with Victor's performance this year. And you can't say Javier Cassiano wouldn't have a shot at it either. I mean, the guy's won everything. So, other than the Triple Crown and the Breeders' Cup Classic.
According to some other news to report, according to Jay Privman of the Daily Racing Forum, California Chrome back on the work tab this morning at Los Alamitos. Easy 3 furlongs in 39 and 3.
Couldn't be any easier.
Quarter pole.
Wouldn't make the tab. Two more fifths, right. He wouldn't have made the tab.
Going from the quarter pole to a furlong past the wire. That's according to Jay Privman. So, your 2014 Derby, Kentucky Derby, and Preakness winner back on the work tab. They have already mentioned another run possibly at Dubai next year.
All right. Why not? A lot of money in Dubai.
We got about 8 or 9 minutes left in this show, Jude. Let's try and make everybody some money today. What do you think?
Well, we'll do our best.
That Mrs. Revere is one of the most contentious. Forget about stakes. It's one of the most contentious races I've handicapped in a very long time for all of my selections for today. Head back over as soon as we wrap up. Go over to the website, horseracingradio.net, and you can take a listen to that Express Bet Weekend Stakes preview. Me and the Uber capper, Ellis Starr, from last night, go over 10 stakes, including all 6 at Laurel and this Mrs. Revere.
Yeah, there's 18 entered. I know that there's not going to be 18 running. The limit is 14, but I don't know. The scratches, I haven't seen them posted yet.
I haven't either. I just took a look, too.
Churchill Downs. But, yeah, I looked while we were on break. But, you know, that's a very – you're right. It's a very contentious race. I haven't crossed out a lot of horses in here. Onus, though, I'll tell you, she's very impressive. I watched her win that allowance race at Laurel, and I said to myself, this filly is a freak. And then she came back in the Commonwealth Oaks, a grade three, and everybody left her alone. She was 20 cents on the dollar, wins by 10, gets a 93 Brisnet speed figure, and then she goes off almost 5-2 in the Commonwealth, and I thought she should have been, like, even money. And she romps. Right. She wins by 4, you know, unbelievable. Got 103 Brisnet speed figure. She has my top turf figure by 12 points, which equates to about 4 lengths. I think she's, you know, any price to win. I mean, if she has any kind of trip at all, she's got good tactical speed, which is perfect for Churchill Downs, kind of a speed favoring turf course. There's really nothing not to like. And she blew out for the race in 47 flat, best of 33. I mean, Sugar Bear, you got Shug McGahey training, you got Forrest Boyce, who rides her perfectly every time.
Perfectly,
what's not to like there?
You very rarely see a horse win by as far as she won by last time, 4.5. And come home fast. You know, normally when they're winning by such a big margin, they're geared down, they're not coming home. She came home her final eighth of a mile in 11-1 last time.
Yeah, she got 109 late pace figure.
Going
long on the turf. I mean, and we were talking about this the other day. Horses that win by open lengths. We were talking to Mark Cassie about Teppan. And you don't see horses win on the grass by open lengths.
Never.
She's been on the grass in her last three starts. She won by 8. She won by 10. She won by 4.5. I mean, she
23
just,
lengths. She three crushes. Starts by a combined 23 lengths.
Yeah, she just crushes the field. So, I mean, you know, straight three-year-old race. She's in with their friends. The horse I thought in there that might have a shot is Return to Grace. She ran in the QE2. She didn't have the best of trips. She was finishing nicely. But when you look at her late pace figure in the QE2, it was an 81, which is pales in comparison to the other filly. So I don't know. I'm pretty much all in on Onus today.
Chad Brown has his obligatory two in here, the 5 Tammy, the Torpedo, and Partisan Politics. We heard the rejoin from Post 11. Javier Castellano actually takes the trip down to Kentucky today to ride Partisan Politics and a few others. She's drawn in Post 11, Jude. I know some handicappers, you know, in such a big field like this and on that Churchill turf course, they'll start to, you know, give second thoughts about picking horses in Post 10, 11, further out than that. That play a big role in your handicapping the race?
Yeah, I mean, without the scratches, you don't know exactly where she's going to be. But, I mean, I think she's certainly a contender. She fires every time. I mean, you know, she just keeps on coming. She's by More Than Ready, one of my favorite sires out of a Dinah former mare. I mean, you can't get a better turf pedigree than that. I like the fact that Javier is making the trip down there. You know, there's no question that's a good sign that all systems are go. So I certainly think she's a major contender from whatever post. You know, I think sometimes we overdo the post thing.
I agree.
You remember 2 weeks ago, was it 2 weeks ago now at the Breeders' Cup? I think it was.
Yeah, too.
You know, outside posts and this and that. And I heard all the geniuses in the press box talking about, you got to be 1 through 6 because Corey Lannery said so and all this jazz, you know. And you hear all these things and it just fills your head, you know. And then you see Nyquist win from the parking lot and, you know, you see Songbird win.
That came in 13-12, right?
Yeah, something like that. So, you know, I mean, there's... I don't know. Posts can be important. I mean, everything isn't going to be ideal. You know, it's funny. Like, if you like a long shot, somebody will say to you, oh, well, that trainer, he's only 8%, and, you know, the jockey's only 10% or whatever. Well, that's why he's a long shot, right? If it was Chad Brown and Javier Castellano, the horse would be 4-5. So, I mean, it's not always going to be perfect. You have to try to figure out where the balance is, you know. So you got a really good horse that breaks from an outside post. That's not so bad. I would rather be in an outside post than an inside post, regardless of the track bias. That's just how I feel.
I was actually a little more interested in the other Chad Brown. Speaking of firing, Tommy the Torpedo. Let's see if she can fire her best shot today. She's run 4 times, won 2 of them. The only 2 times she's lost, the horse that won the race was a little filly by the name of Lady Eli. She was actually, Jude, get this, 6-5 into Lady Eli in the second starts of their career last year in the Miss Grillo.
Yeah, that's something to be said for that. And, of course, Florent Giroux. I mean, I think you could do a heck of a lot worse if you went to the racetrack and just bet on Florent Giroux all day. I mean, you know you're going to get some good rides, that's for sure. That guy is a freak. He is so good. I'm a big Florent Giroux fan. So
it's worth noting, speaking of Chad Brown and Rod Ortiz, who rode Tammy the Torpedo last time, Rod could have went down to Laurel today, and he could have went down to Churchill today. He decides to stick around the Big Apple and ride, among others, Mr. Maybe in the Red Smith, going 11 furlongs, 3 turns here at the Big A, one of my favorite races of the year, with just a couple of minutes left here on the Equine Forum. But it's an interesting race. You always get a couple that are, I don't want to say dropping down because it's a grade 3, but they, you know, have faced a little better, namely a horse like War Dancer in this event. And then you get horses like Mr. Maybe, who are trying stakes company for the first time. And Arado T sticks around to ride him, who he's ridden just once last time out, winning at 11 furlongs at Belmont. May want to keep an eye on that and know that up here at Aqueduct, there'll be some moisture in the ground. We've been off the turf a couple of days, and of course should be labeled good or soft here at the Big A. Jude, a lot of fun as always. I got an idea. Let's do it again next week.
All right, sounds good. I'll be here.
I will too, as the Baron will be on vacation next week as well. Thanks to Eric Barland, Linda Rice, and Dave Rodman. Great slew of guests today. On behalf of Jude Feld and our producer to the stars, Lee Delapina, I'm the Big A. Hope you have a wonderful weekend. Make some money. I hope you win all of your photo finishes. And Jude?
Good night, Barbados.